Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
A leading business group has come out in favor of granting driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants, increasing the chance of the bill's passage in the legislature this year. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The Business Council's president, Heather Brichetti, says reinstituting the policy of issuing New York State driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants will make the road safer and help businesses. She says they're seeking workers during a labor shortage.
Our immigration system is broken. This does not fix it. But what it does is it gives undocumented immigrants the opportunity to sit for a test, to get licensed, to get on the road, and to have insurance so that when they're driving in New York, they will be covered.
The Business Council's membership includes most major upstate businesses, including Corning and Eastman Kodak, and Brichetti says her group's support might help provide cover for upstate Democrats who may be on the fence over the issue.
I hope so. I mean, I think that there's a really easy, valid reason to do this.
Brichetti was joined by the sponsors of the bills, Assemblyman Marcos Crespo and Senator Luis Sepulveda. Crespo says the bill has been amended to make it easier for law enforcement to seek DMV records of the immigrants if they are pulled over for traffic infractions.
It was never the intention to interfere with local law enforcement's common practice to enforce traffic laws. There was concern that the language as drafted in the first version would have an impact, and we do correct that in the new language. It is explicit that local law enforcement continues to have and apply the same standards for policing and local traffic enforcement.
Opponents of the bill, including some county clerks, say granting driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants diminishes the value of the document to legal residents. They say it could also lead to criminals taking advantage of the system and even to open a back door to illegal voting. Some county clerks have said they would not grant the licenses if the bill became law. Senator Sepulveda says those accusations have been disproven, and he says if the clerks won't grant the licenses, they should be removed from office.
We believe the governor has, within the constitutional powers given to him, the right to remove a county clerk that doesn't follow the law, and we've also introduced legislation that would allow the governor to remove, in case there's any doubt about whether he has the power or not, we've introduced legislation that would allow the governor to remove any county clerk who doesn't perform their constitutional duties.
The state's Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul was Erie County Clerk 12 years ago when former Governor Elliot Spitzer proposed a similar measure. Hochul said at the time she would turn over any applicants for the licenses to immigration authorities. But she now backs the measure. The bill sponsors say Hochul's reversal on the issue also helps their cause. Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says the new support is helpful toward getting the measure passed, but she would not guarantee a vote right now in the Senate.
I think we keep talking, we keep pushing.
Senate sponsor Sepulveda says the Democratic Senate is diverse and that some of the newly elected Democrats from Long Island still have some concerns. But he says he plans to meet with them over the next few days to try to address that. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Well, the governor came on the air after a hiatus, and among the things you asked him was about his fundraising, $25,000 dinners. That was in the New York Times, of course. And it prompted you into a discussion where he finally acknowledged he's seeking a fourth term.
Well, yeah, because there's no other rationale for collecting money unless you're going to use it for something. Now, he's not running for president. He's made that clear. He says he, quote, likes Joe Biden, although he hasn't formally endorsed. It's very close to it. So he's not running for president of the United States. It's unlikely from blue state New York that he's going to be the vice presidential candidate. So the only place, and I've been writing about this for quite a while now, David, the only place for him to go is to continue to be governor. He doesn't want to go to a law firm and sit in a corner office somewhere and make rain. This is a guy who likes to do policy. And so we asked him, and, you know, the only rationale for collecting all that money is to do it this way for a purpose. And the purpose is running for governor again. And he made a lot of headlines by saying it. I've always thought that his relationship with his father is very telling. He loves his father, that's clear, but he's also competitive. Papa did it, he wants to do it. Papa was denied a fourth term, he lost to Pataki. I think Cuomo says that this is something that he wants to do. So it was interesting.
Well, and of course, one of the major issues that has not been talked about in quite a while is ethics reform. You also pushed him on that.
What did
you think of his response?
Well, okay, I didn't like it. I don't think anybody should be allowed to charge $25,000 for a ticket. He said if anybody ever came to him and said, I gave you money, he'd knock him on his keister. You know what? It doesn't ring true. Nobody should be giving that kind of money in these campaigns because you know that when somebody gives you $25,000, they want something back for it. And the Supreme Court is very specific on this. If you're going to be convicted of bribery, you got to say, if you do this, then I'll do that. That's known as a quid pro quo. Otherwise, anybody can give money, and a lot of it. And that is what is happening right now. And if New York was serious about what it was doing, it would enhance their ethics efforts, and they would say, you can't do this and you can't do that. And they would certainly create a watchdog. Right now, we have something called J-COPE, which is referred to by most as J-Joke. People who run it have always been fierce Cuomo allies. They're losing another one right now. It ought to be appointed by a so-called outsider, perhaps a group of judges or professors or whoever you want to do. It ought to be somebody appointed from the outside, David, as opposed to being a friend of the people who are supposedly being watched.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York Public Interest Research Group has a new report showing the prevalence of emerging contaminants detected in the state's public drinking water supplies. With a focus the past few years on PFOA and PFOS from Hoosick Falls to Newburgh, NYPIRG highlights other emerging contaminants. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
NYPIRG's report, What's in My Water, focused on more than 20 emerging contaminants in addition to PFOA, PFOS, and 1,4-dioxane that the federal government requires be tested in water systems serving 10,000 or more residents. Liz Moran is NYPIRG Environmental Policy Director and the report's lead author.
But that leaves 6.4 million New Yorkers completely in the dark about what emerging contaminants may be in their drinking water supplies. These are New Yorkers that rely on private wells, which have effectively no regulations, and New Yorkers on small public water systems like Hoosick Falls.
The State Department of Health does not regulate private wells.
We found that 7 different emerging contaminants, which does include PFOA, PFOS, and 1,4-dioxane, were found at levels that exceed EPA's health guidance. They call it a reference concentration.
She says the report is being released to underscore NYPIRG's call for New York to establish drinking water standards for at least PFOA, PFOS, and 1,4-dioxane, and to begin the process to develop standards for other emerging contaminants. In December, the New York State Drinking Water Quality Council recommended maximum contaminant levels, or MCLs, for the 3 chemicals, an MCL of 10 parts per trillion for PFOA and PFOS each, and an MCL of 1 part per billion for 1,4-dioxane. A DOH spokeswoman says, quote, the state has taken unprecedented action and made historic investments in protecting drinking water through the $2.5 billion Clean Water Infrastructure Act, which includes $200 million currently available to communities to manage emerging contaminants, and an additional $500 million in this year's budget. The recommendations from the Drinking Water Quality Council go above and beyond New York's already protective water quality measures and are being reviewed thoroughly and responsibly. We will review NYPIRG's report, end quote. NYPERG's review of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's so-called third unregulated contaminant monitoring rule data from 2013 to 2015 found that 176 water systems detected one or more emerging contaminants, affecting nearly 16 million New Yorkers.
Yeah, so we found that there were 16 distinct emerging contaminants that were detected in the Hudson Valley. Like numerous regions in the state, strontium and chromium-6 were the most frequently detected contaminants.
Strontium is a naturally occurring element in the environment. The EPA has a health reference level at 1,500 parts per billion. NYPERG's report shows that the highest detected level of strontium was 2,660 parts per billion in the Station Road Square water system in Orange County, a small public water system. The second highest was 2,600 parts per billion in the Clifton Park water system in Albany County. Moran says EPA does not have a health reference level for chromium-6, which is linked with stomach cancer and other illnesses.
Hexavalent chromium is the other term it goes by. It's a chemical that became notorious after Aaron Brockovich looked into the chemical in Hinckley, California.
California has a public health goal for chromium-6 of 0.02 parts per billion and had an MCL of 10 parts per billion. Moran says every New York detection exceeded California's health goal. In the Hudson Valley, the most detections were in Orange and Westchester counties. Chromium-6 occurs naturally in the environment, but higher levels can be found due to industrial pollution. NYPERG's report stresses that the existence of an emerging contaminant in a drinking water supply does not necessarily put consumers' health at risk. However, the group urges public officials to do more to prevent contamination. For example, Moran says there should be more statewide testing.
We need to test for every drinking water system in New York State. The more data we have, the better, and the more informed the public is, the better.
The report found that Long Island has, by far, the most detections of emerging contaminants found in drinking water, followed closely by the Hudson Valley. A link to the report is at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Earlier this month, the acting chair of the Adirondack Park Agency resigned. The move concerns advocates who say it's a symptom of a weakening board that leads the park's land use planning. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The Adirondack Park Agency Board consists of 11 members. 8 are appointed by the Governor of New York and 3 by agency commissioners. 5 live inside the park and 3 outside. The remaining 3 are agency designees. In early May, Acting Chair Karen Feldman resigned. She became the board's leader in July 2018, but was serving on an expired term. Her departure leaves the agency with 3 agency representatives and 5 appointees. 3 appointees are serving on expired terms, and another ends on June 30th. 3 seats are vacant. Adirondack advocacy groups want Governor Andrew Cuomo to take action before the legislative session ends in mid-June and appoint commissioners or extend terms. Adirondack Wild, Friends of the Forest Preserve, managing partner David Gibson, writes, the APA is rudderless.
This is a serious, serious situation. When you have someone like Karen Feldman, who is making a great effort to sit down with all stakeholders and do a level best to maintain the independence of the APA as the long-range planning body for the park, and she has to resign, that should be sending a signal to the governor that this is serious.
Protect the Adirondacks Executive Director Peter Bauer says Governor Cuomo needs to take management of the park agency more seriously.
This governor has simply not invested the leadership or the state budgets or a vision for how this agency should operate in the park.
Bauer says that's illustrated by the status of the board in the wake of Acting Chair Feldman's resignation.
There are now 3 vacancies. The last 2 chairs, the chair and the acting chair, have both resigned inside of a year. And remaining board members are serving even though their terms have expired. So the governor has really failed in his management of the Adirondack Park Agency. And it's high time that the governor looks seriously at the needs of the Adirondack Park Agency and starts to take management of the Adirondack Park much more seriously.
While the advocates are focused on the repercussions of Feldman's departure, the Adirondack Explorer reports she decided to resign because although she was doing the chair's work, she was not receiving the chair's salary. Again, David Gibson.
The APA chair, in my experience, does a lot of outreach and a lot of work for the park and for the agency. So she was appointed acting chair. She should have received the chair's salary or the stipend that the chair has been receiving since the late 1980s.
Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Jerry Delaney isn't worried about the Adirondack Park Agency Board, noting similar gaps have occurred in the past.
It's disappointing that Karen resigned. We would like to see the governor get some appointments done. I know there's been talk of it. And with these empty seats and the expired terms, it really would benefit the Adirondacks to have that board a little bit closer to a full slate of appointees than it is today. I mean, there's nothing controversial on the horizon that I'm aware of, but I would anticipate by the end of session that the governor is going to have nominations move forward, if I was to guess.
Former acting chair Karen Feldman was not available for comment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. While the controversy over the sale of flavored tobacco and electronic cigarettes continues, a proposed ban on retail sales of the products in Albany County is being challenged by convenience store owners. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The New York Association of Convenience Stores believes Local Law E could result in stores and the county losing money. NIAC's President Jim Calvin spoke Tuesday in Latham.
Under Local Law E, flavored tobacco would disappear from Albany County convenience stores, causing them economic harm. Yet flavored tobacco would remain abundantly accessible to Albany County residents.
Calvin cited major roadways where one side is in Albany County, the other in Schenectady County.
Displaced smokers could simply cross the intersection to buy their brand of flavored products. This would both defeat the policy and export the sales tax to Schenectady County. And while they're over there, they'll also buy the gas and the food and the beverages and the lottery.
Calvin says stores stand to lose 5 to 10% or more of their inside sales just in tobacco products.
If they can't find their flavored tobacco product here, they'll go over there. They're not going to come back here and buy the gas or come back here and buy the coffee. They're going to buy it over there. So we lose all that business. Albany County loses all that sales tax revenue.
A spokesperson for Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said the measure is, quote, at the committee meeting level and was tabled by legislators last month. It is on the Health Committee agenda under previous business for Wednesday night's meeting. We generally don't comment at this stage. Albany County Legislature Chair Andrew Joyce, like McCoy, a Democrat, says he expects the measure to move out of committee and go before legislators for a full vote by June. He added that many of the lawmakers are concerned about children being exposed to smoking, and at least 17 of them are on board with Local Law E.
We need 20 to pass, so it's going to be important to see what happens. We've sought the opinion of our county health commissioner, medical professionals. And we've heard from the American Heart Association, Smoke-Free New York. This local law kind of took a bit of a change after Governor Cuomo banned tobacco products, these products for the use of people under the age of 21. So then it became, this local law being put forth. And then it's okay. I think a lot of individuals in the legislature thought, well, if there's someone over the age of 21, it's their choice. We shouldn't be telling them what to do. But then there's the other side of the coin, where there's evidence that these products are being marketed to people that are under the age of 21.
Calvin pointed out that while Local Law E acknowledges that 5% of retailers statewide sold tobacco to minors between 2010 and 2012, the rate among Albany County retailers that same period was less than 0.5%. Hinting that the legislature was on the wrong path, Democratic County Comptroller Mike Connors says tobacco legislation should be addressed at the state or federal level.
I think we ought to take care of the poor in our county. That's the first thing we'll do. That'll save county taxpayers money, and more importantly, it'll make us more competitive because we'll have more people in the workforce available, ready, willing, and able to work to fill the jobs that are open now.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A decades-old amusement park in Lake George, New York, has a new prehistoric look. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard took a tour of the Lake George Expedition Park and filed this report.
In a stretch of tourist attractions on Route 9 on the way to Lake George, the Magic Forest has entertained families since the early 60s. Opening this Memorial Day weekend, the amusement park has been rebranded the Lake George Expedition Park, and the main attraction is Dino Roar Valley. Just inside the main gates stands a life-size animatronic dinosaur. The Dilophosaurus roamed the Earth 199 to 175 million years ago in the Jurassic era. Today, Dilophosaurus is greeting a group of local reporters and photographers for a tour of the new attraction.
Hello, and welcome to Expedition Base Camp. I'm Simon, the junior paleontologist here at Dino Roar Valley.
At a pavilion where guests will gather, a video features 10-year-old Simon Trebovich. Simon, who is from Burnt Hills in Saratoga County, is here in the flesh, too. He's wearing a paleontologist's uniform, complete with the hat.
I think it's really cool. I think people will like it because it's hard to believe that dinosaurs once roamed right here, you know? Isn't that pretty hard to believe?
Simon thinks visitors will get a kick out of the 20 life-size dinosaurs at the park.
Yeah, I just think people will like them a lot because you'd think they'd be smaller from the pictures on your phones, you know?
The paved, handicapped, accessible path slopes into the Dino Roar Valley.
Are we going to go down to the next set?
General Manager John Collins says visitors to the old Magic Forest may remember this area, now filled with dinosaurs.
The area that we're in was the old safari ride. So if they remember the safari ride that they rode in a tram, that's where this is built. Okay, so this existing pathway was already here. This is development of that area.
The nursery rhyme and storybook-themed Magic Forest is still here, too, with the classic rides like a Ferris wheel and a tilt-a-whirl. The transformation into Lake George Expedition Park is part of a new mission, according to Collins.
Education, why we're entertaining at the time, so edutainment.
The dinosaurs, all squawking, growling, and roaring, are positioned in the trees where guests can get close. There is signage providing facts and information about what the creatures ate, when they lived, and other facts. There are also amenities like a performance stage, a fossil dig activity area, and a building that can host gatherings like birthday parties. Hunter Brown is getting a first look with his mom and siblings.
I want to see a T-Rex.
You want to see a T-Rex? Simon, do you think we'll see a T-Rex?
Maybe.
Okay, he's not going to give it away.
And I won't either. You'll have to see for yourself. The Lake George Expedition Park says the Dino Roar Valley tour takes about 30 minutes and can be enjoyed with or without a paleontologist tour guide. Tickets can be purchased for the Magic Forest and Dino Roar Valley together or separately. For photos and more information, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1922. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino.